You're listening to Vulcan Hello, the Incomparable's only podcast dedicated to new Star Trek. I am Scott McNulty, and across Breen space, I am joined by Mr. Jason Snell. Hello, Jason. I do one of the things I most enjoy
he
about
says
Breen.
He says it's great to be here, Scott. I don't think he said that.
No, he didn't say that. But I love the fact that he brought his own translator. He's like, I don't want your universal translator. I'm not going to talk your language. You'll listen to my guy.
Yeah. Yeah. A little power move. Yeah. It we're in Breen. The Breen. More Breen. They're back.
They are back and better than ever. Mm. Certainly more screen time than ever. We are talking about Star Trek Discovery Season 5, Episode 7. Can I say it? Eriga,
blood bounty
thing. Yeah. Yes. If you have not been listening or watching, I mean, hopefully you're watching Discovery and listening to this podcast. If you're not watching Discovery and listening to this podcast, thank you. This is the culmination of kind of the Breen blood oath hunt thingy.
Yep.
And as with is our tradition, I will ask Jason what he thought of the episode before we talk about it. What did you think of the episode before we talk about it, Jason?
It was a good episode. I didn't like it as much as last week, but I liked it. I liked it. It's a different kind of episode.
Very different.
But I liked it. What about you?
I liked it too. It was very talky.
Yes.
Which I don't. I like a chatty Star Trek show. I feel like it kind of harkened back to some of the TOS episodes in the direction and swoopy camera. If you watch some of those older original series episodes, and they were doing all kinds of wacky camera placement and things.
Director John Dudkowski, he's got a camera like on a pivot. And also the
he's
editing,
not afraid to use it.
Which, you know, the director is going to supervise that part too. This is an episode that knows that it's talky, and the director is going to try to use every trick in the book to make it more visually interesting, and I think succeeds more often than not.
Yes, I particularly like the shot where they show the Federation emblem on the floor, and then it segues into the Discovery arriving at the Federation HQ. I thought that was very effective.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of swoopy, and there's a fight later on in sickbay that I thought was very. If they hadn't done what they were doing with the camera, it probably would have been boring, but it was quite exciting with it swooping around and doing all kinds of stuff. So I liked it. Some people might think it was a bit much.
There are a bunch of early pacing notes, too, where I felt like the show was trying very hard to sort of like move the story along and not linger. And I noticed it and I appreciated it.
Yeah, because they need to cover a lot of ground to get to the point of this episode. Which is, you know, the resolution of figuring out why Locke is so darn important to the Primarch, although we kind of know, but we find out a little bit more. And
our main characters do not know, right? They didn't get to see the flashback that we got to see.
They should watch their own show, really.
Explain a lot.
It would. They would make this much easier. Mm-hmm. But also, and I appreciate the fact that they didn't forget. They have Stamets reminding everyone, hey, remember, the reason why we're here is to solve this clue, right? This is the most important thing.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, yeah, but there's a giant Breen ship. Mm-hmm. But no, we've got this clue. Yeah. So I like that. I overall, I liked it as well. I like the direction. I like a conference room. There are a lot of conference rooms.
Sure.
I also, and I've said this before, Jason, but I enjoy when Star Trek aliens are a little more alien than most Star Trek aliens. And I feel like the Breen are still, we still don't know a whole lot about the Breen. And that makes them exciting. And I feel like we're not learning a huge amount, but we're learning more than we ever have about the Breen. And so it makes it a little more interesting. And they seem, you know, to not be very nice.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Something else we talk about here sometimes is sort of the multi-layered plot, and sometimes there's like a B or a C or a D plot that's sort of pointless or boring. I thought that this was a really good combination of your A plot, which is a diplomatic crisis, and there's some action and fighting and things like that. But it is ultimately a diplomatic crisis brought on by these two characters, Mal and Locke, that we've been watching the whole season. And how they deal with that, and that's the A plot. And then the B plot is solving the mystery, right? Smart people. I said this in a previous episode. I really do enjoy when smart people are trying to solve puzzles. And even though I know, you know, with Star Trek and it's all made up and all of that, like, still it is very fun to have them walk through the puzzle solving and you get to kind of go on that ride with them. And here we actually have sort of two sets of puzzle solvers working not together, which there is a point late in the episode where Stamets is talking to Book and asking questions. And I'm like, the other guys figured that part out already. You should talk to them.
Yeah. So, but you know what eternal means.
But still, I really enjoyed that whole thing where they're trying to solve the mystery of the little thing and where they go next. And since we have this episode that's not about jumping to the next thing, they can instead use the B plot to be solving the problem of where to go with the next thing. And I exactly. thought that was effective.
I agree. I think that, you know, they did well. And this features Tignataro is a gift to the Star Trek franchise, as is the character Reno, and the scene in which we find out that she was at one point, she had a lot of odd jobs. Uh-huh. She was an antiquarian book reseller, a.k.a. smuggler, yes. Which leads to a delightful scene.
And possibly worked for Pelia. Which is yes. also very funny from Strange New Worlds, because makes a reference to the weird shady antiquarian archivist, mm-hmm. and which is again just a word for steals old stuff and then keeps it,
well, you know, keeps it safe though,
which is Pelia to a nut, mm-hmm. you know, to a T. So yeah, that's a little funny bit. The whole Reno scene. I mean, it's so just great, right? Because Reno knows important things. I love, okay, again, talking about a talky scene where it is enlivened by the direction and mm-hmm. the stage direction, essentially, is that is just a download from poor Tignataro, right? Like, mm-hmm. I kept saying, oh, she must have gotten the script and been like, oh, boy, okay. But... she's like phasering things and like walk with me and we can do this mm-hmm. while we're doing that and all that. And it's like, it makes it so much more interesting to watch the data download while there's other stuff going on. So I thought that was really yes. good.
And it doesn't do what Discovery sometimes does, which is pause this kind of life-threatening thing and say, okay, let's just sit down and talk. They do talk, but they acknowledge, like, Reno is doing all those things because the Breen are about to arrive and she doesn't want to be left unprepared.
Exactly.
So she needs to fix the phasers exactly. and look at the shields.
Let's do this at the same time. And so, yes, mm-hmm. you get that sense of the impending the ticking clock that's going on in the A plot, but there's also this, while we're doing that, we also need to solve this other thing. Cause the whole purpose here is that they, you know, they want to do this fast so that they can get and solve this problem before the Breen or Malinlock can deal with it. So the two clocks are ticking together and maybe they're even the same clock, but I just, it's a good scene and they use Tignataro so well. And she's so good. I mean, and the way she's written and the way it's performed of being funny. And I saw somebody pointed out that technically since they come from the Discovery era, which is pre-TOS, the idea that you would call a drink Seven of Limes doesn't make any sense. Who cares? Because it made me laugh.
Oh my goodness, that was my favorite line in this entire possibly season.
The entire show of Star Trek Discovery is now worth it because there's a drink called Seven of Limes.
And you know, she could read up about Seven of Nine. One assumes that there, you know, she's a big character. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, probably read up about Seven of Nine and was like, wow, that's just like that name of that drink I used to make.
What a coincidence.
Yeah, exactly. It's okay. I read a baseball newsletter. I get a baseball newsletter that frequently points out, you know, when it's talking about what the baseball teams are doing, it'll be like, they've won 7 of 9. And invariably, it links to a picture of Jerry Ryan. and it makes me laugh every time. So like 7 of 9 things are out there and maybe it means something different. I would say it's not Jet Reno making a reference that's out of canon for 7 of 9. It's the show making a reference for us to laugh at. And
yes,
listener,
mission accomplished.
I did. Yeah.
I laughed heartily.
Yes.
And it was well worth the price of admission. Seven of limes. That's what I say. Fantastic. So why don't we just talk about what happens in this episode, right?
Let's do it.
Maul and Locke have been captured. They escaped from last episode and it didn't work out, so they're sending out an SOS, which doesn't seem like the greatest idea because apparently everybody hears it and tries to get them. Federation gets them first, and the Discovery jumps to gather them up and bring them to Federation HQ, which they do. But oh no, as we know from the last episode, Locke is injured and he's not doing well. And so you got to put him in sick bay. And Dr. Culber is like, I'm a doctor, not a Breen specialist, but I'll do my best. And he, little shout out for the Dominion War. Woo. Turns out
there's like Breen a cryo bed. There's like a cryo bed that he can get out of Starfleet medical archive from the Dominion War era. And this is so. There are a few points in this, Jet Reno notwithstanding, where I thought that a slight amount of humor could have enlivened some of these scenes. I felt like there were moments where I'm commenting on what's going on, and I thought, surely a character could make the same comment. And one of them is when the Breen doctor comes in to try and save Locke at the end of the episode. And, and keeping in mind, they've got him in a Dominion War era cryo bed. I really wanted a line from that character, or maybe from the translator, that was basically like, what is this ancient thing you got him in? And have them be like, look, it's the best we could do. We don't know anything. And they just don't even comment on it. But I'm like, it's seriously, it's like you're walking into a 700-year-old piece of medical equipment. You can't, that can't be good.
This is not good.
Yeah, but it is straight out of a lot of Deep Space Nine references in here, which was very fun. Yeah.
Yes, it makes sense as well. And so they hurry back to Federation HQ because the idea is let's bring them back to the Federation HQ and we'll deal with them there. And we'll dock and we'll get a victor's welcome. There'll be a parade and Admiral Vance will give us hugs and candy. But it turns out the Discovery is not allowed to dock. And Admiral Vance is like, okay, here's the plan. New plan, Michael Burnham. You run away as fast as you can.
Yeah. And Burnham, again, not to the credit of Vance, basically says, they will catch us and then we will be in this situation. So let's just be in this situation. Vance is like, you're right. Okay. Which, and that, again, I mean, I wanted a little more there because he just sort of agrees with her.
Immediately.
But I mean, throughout this episode, there are these moments that I just have to say, I have to accept that it's shorthand because this is a TV show and there's only so much time they want to spend on these things. Because later, there's that moment where Rayner and Burnham have a heart-to-heart. That's a very good scene. I enjoy it, where she's trying to get stuff out of him, and she gets a little bit about his background and how it connects to the Breen out of him. And then she says, I think you've provided me with the solution. And he's like, great. And she's like, all right, I got to go.
See you later.
And I thought to myself, what are you doing? Like, you would tell him what it is, and then you would have a conversation of like, does this make sense? And he'd be like, yeah, how about this thing? Oh yeah, okay. And I realized at this moment, this show does not want to have your characters talking because this point is really just to move the plot forward. And like, I accept it, but I do admit that at a couple of places I had that moment of frustration, which is, it's a little too pat. It's a little like, right? Like nobody would actually talk like this. Nobody is going to say, oh, you've given me the perfect idea to solve our problem that we're all suffering from. Well, gotta go. Right? Like,
well, especially since Rayner is basically the most knowledgeable person about the Breen. Yes.
So she should run it by him. And she said, this is one of my, like, I don't think they had the time for it. But what I really wanted is for Burnham to say, what about this? And have him be like, well, no, because of this. And she's like, oh, well, what about this? The problem is the episode wants to hold the plan away from us.
It wants it. Yes.
I'm not sure it needs to.
I don't think it does either.
But it does. Also, I'll say just while I'm on this thread that later when the plan is like, well, we talked to another Primarch, the one that took over Rayner's planet. Now, she has cut a deal with us. So unless you can beat that deal, we're just going to go. And this is their plan. And at no point during the episode do I get any sense of whether they're just lying or if this is the plan, is to go to another Primarch. Because the episode is not interested in telling us that. It's like, okay, all right, fine, fine. I'll go with it. I went with it, but part of my brain was like, wait a second, what's going on here?
And part of my brain was like, the Primarch that's there is like, that is an obvious lie, which it is. To prove it, Raynor just tells him a bunch of things about the other Primarch, which doesn't prove anything other than he knows some things about this other Primarch.
Right. Which again, to me, my brain processes the whole thing. And I said, this feels like it's a complete fraud, but he believes it. So, you know, either I go with it or I assume that it's actually not a complete fraud and they totally did this stuff and they're playing the Breen against one another and that's what's going on here. And
I think it's a complete fraud.
You know, but I think it is. But again, like, I feel like you need something a little bit more there because it did feel like, yeah, we talked to a Primarch. Yeah, you know, the one that the one that you don't like. Oh, do you mean Sarah? Yes, Sarah. We talked to Sarah, right? Like, they're cold reading this guy and making up Breen stuff about it. But like, yeah, because it's like, yeah, you know, sometimes she wears a green shirt. Oh, she does sometimes wear a green shirt.
She loves that green shirt.
Yeah, Rhaenyra's like, yeah, she conquered my people in that green shirt. So what do we do now? But, you know, it's fine. Whatever.
It doesn't matter.
TOS has some plots, some Kirk schemes that are about as silly as that. So it's fine.
Yes, it is fine. But that was my main thing. I was like, why would he? He would totally not believe this. But he does, and it's fine.
Breen are different. I mean,
that out.
Absolutely his Achilles heel in terms of his fear of this whole situation is that he thought that he was, you know, that nobody knew about it and he was going to be able to do this all surreptitiously. And now, I guess that would be the argument, is that it does seem like a complete hoax, but from the Breen perspective, he can't chance it. Maybe.
Right. And from his perspective also, it's like, either way, it doesn't, like, he's not risking a whole lot. So he like, okay, fine, I'll believe you. And if it turns out you're wrong, I'll just come back and kill you all. So it's fine. And I guess we should say the big discovery that we find out in this episode, which maybe I just forgot, but we find out that Locke is basically his uncle is Primarch, but his father or mother, I think his father, but who knows, was emperor.
Father or grandfather,
grandfather. Somebody.
He's a direct descendant of the emperor and so would have that level of power. I think we knew that. And if we didn't, I would say it was strongly implied in that flashback. It might have been even clearer than that.
I don't remember that particular part, but they remind us for people like me who didn't remember that.
Certainly we know he's key to the Primarch's plan to become the Emperor of the Breen.
Yes. And we find out what there are 6 Primarchs that all want to be Emperor. And so they're all fighting against each other. Mm-hmm. As happens. And so they show up, the Breen show up at Federation HQ, but the Federation president is off gallivanting somewhere on a work trip.
Couldn't get that actor, so.
Nope. But we have Trina, who I like and is a great character and does a great job in this episode, so hooray for her. And continues the tradition of Vulcans lying or exaggerating.
Yeah. I mean, she's representing Navarre, so, you know, they've learned a lot from the Romulans over the years.
Sure. And they have a little scene where they have their little confab with Raynor and Burnham and Trina and Vance, where basically she's like, okay, the Breen are coming. What's the plan, people? And Raynor's like, all Breen are bad. Our only plan should be to destroy them before they destroy us. And everyone's like, sheesh.
Yeah.
Walk it back, Raynor. Come on. What's going on?
Yeah. Which is a little bit over the top, but it's there so that Burnham later is like, I see you're troubled. We need to talk about why that is, because we could use that, which is not exactly the most empathetic thing, but it's what works.
And I have to say another thing that struck me. Admiral Vance, and it is implied to me that Admiral Vance and Captain Raynor have history together. And you would think that Admiral Vance would know that Captain Raynor has this history of the Breen using his world as a munitions dump.
Yeah, everybody, right? Because he's a Kelleran, so everybody should know about what, because he himself witnessed this occupation. Mm-hmm. So it's not a historic, like, something that happened 300 years ago. It's like something in his lifetime. So yes, that should, presumably that would be on his, in his file, that it's unclear. Like, again, I filled it in with my headcanon that maybe Kelleran, this is after the Breen left or the Breen were rejected. They went to the Federation and said, we want to join the Federation because we want to be part of something that will also help protect us. And that that's sort of how it happened. But we don't, it's that, even that is not really clear.
Yes. I was just surprised that people wouldn't be like, Raynor, we understand you're so emotional about this, but we're not going to blow them up. We need to do something.
So let's invite the guy where the Breen killed his family and millions of other people on this planet to this meeting about the Breen. Well, how do you think it was going to go?
Yeah, it's not going to go well. It doesn't go well for him.
No,
he gets sent to the hallway as a matter of fact.
He does, and he doesn't beam there. Which I ever since they beamed upstairs, I because who wants to use stairs? We filled in the stairs. We removed the stairs because we don't need them anymore in the 31st century.
It's a waste of space.
I did enjoy that. No, you got to walk in the hallway because Burnham's going to walk in the hallway, and you're going to talk in the hallway, and so therefore you can't. Because I was waiting for him to be like, double tap on his communicator, and that is not what he does. He has to make the walk of shame to get out of there.
He does. He's out of there. And Maul and Locke do not want to help the Federation. And Locke does not want to meet his uncle. He doesn't, not a big fan of his uncle.
No, it's very bad. And we know because we've seen the flashback. We know how bad that is.
Mm-hmm. There's some history there that we have seen.
They come up with a plan.
Michael to spit in his face.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they're trying. I like that Culber tries to save him. That's a very, you know, we get the sort of doctor in his little cryo bed and all of that. But like, they come up with a plan. And I thought it was a great little final moment kind of for Locke to be like, you're not going to like it. But his plan is that he's going to overdose himself on trichordrazine, which, you know, cortrazine is bad enough, but the tricortrazine has got to be really bad. He overdoses a little too much, but that is the distraction that allows her to escape. And she fights and punches the security guards who wear leather jackets with Star Trek insignia on them, because I guess that's
they're
the
tough
thing that security guards do. And she runs away, but she doesn't get very far before Burnham finds her and says, yeah, he's dying. You should come back and say goodbye. And the whole thing is just a complete failure. Yeah.
And I did like the, so one of the things that this episode does well, as we said, is kind of weave together kind of the clocks and the complications. So Maul and Locke have this plan to escape. Meanwhile, Burnham is telling the Primarch, oh, we totally have them both and they're fine. And then, you know, little does she know that Locke has basically killed himself.
Yes.
And Maul is running loose on the ship somewhere.
Yeah. She's somewhere else.
She needs they need a Breen medic to help with to Locke. And the only way to get a Breen medic is to ask a Breen Primarch.
Yeah.
And the Primarch is like, I'm not sending a medic without me. So they come over. Guess who's coming to dinner?
Yeah.
The Breen.
Who's coming to sick bay?
And I guess the medic they brought was not very good because R.I.P. Locke. He's dead. And nobody seems all that sad about it, except for Maul.
Right. It's a nice sad moment that, like,
he says, I love you.
He was motivated by other things and just didn't want to be trapped in Breen culture. And it's very sad. And obviously it's going to be completely distressing for Maul to lose him. I knew it though. Like, even in the first episode where he's like, we ought to be careful. And she's like, no, chaos, baby. And I'm like, oh, she's going to get this poor guy killed.
He knows what he's talking about. Yeah. Listen to Locke Maul.
Yeah, really?
She does not. I will say, I do continue to really like Maul and Locke as characters. I like their dynamic, and I like how Maul is basically, you can just sense that she's just kind of flailing and trying to get out of bad situations by jumping into worse situations and just assuming it'll work itself out eventually. It's got to.
Just keep playing for time. Yeah. It's a good moment where she shows her tattoo or brand or whatever, where it's the marriage brand. And she's like, aha, I'm part of your family. And he's like, this is an abomination. She's like, it doesn't matter because I got information and I am still part of your family. And that leads to a, I would say, not as dramatic decision conversation about whether they're going to let her go or not. Because, like,
of course they're going to let her go.
She wants to go, and like, what, you're going to just keep her, and like, you just gotta play this game now. Like, this is how it's going to go, and yet they have that kind of not very dramatic conversation about what they're going to do. That it's obvious what they're going to do, but it does set up.
So Book can be like, this is not right.
Yeah, exactly. Where I keep thinking, like, Book, you're just not like. You don't think like a Starfleet. You should probably maybe not be around and not, you know, but I guess he's there on his community service, right? So that's why he's around.
He has to be. That's court mandated. He must be in those meetings.
So, anyway, that resolution is really interesting, right? Because she's mourning him. The only problem I have with it is that they have the twist in there, which is, oh, well, the progenitor technology might not only create life, but bring people back from death, which means that she's probably trying to just bring him back. And that's the deal that they've apparently made, is she'll get this technology and then they'll bring him back to life and they'll go off together, which seems like a fantasy. But the thing it reminded me of is last year's mad scientist who had his magical rainbow land that he was going to go to where everybody was happy. And I didn't need to be reminded of that motivation for a character. of I'm just trying to bring my loved one back to life in magical rainbow land. I don't love that.
Well, this one, I feel like this works a little better because we have we have seen the relationship. But yes, it does have echoes of that. And then for our next exciting episode, we find out that the book, the thing they have is actually a library card for a book that is stored in the Eternal Gallery and Archive, which sounds like something out of Doctor Who, Jason.
It does. I love it, though, the idea that there is a maybe that's where Mr. Atos went to. I love that there is like a floating mystery library in the Badlands that is full of original things and mysteries, and you have to get the right card, and it's basically like it's a library, but it's also sort of like they've been given the safety deposit box key for a manuscript, a famous Beta Z manuscript. Yeah.
With the labyrinths of the mind.
I love the idea. I mean, those subplots are fun, right? Like Tilly and Adira trying to figure out how it all works and going to Reno and like getting that part of the clue. And then on the other side, Stamets and Book sort of under protest trying to in the end. And again, this is where one line of dialogue would have, I think, made it enliven it a little bit more, where Stamets is like, hey, here's a piece of metal. You're an empath. Maybe they did something to it. And I wanted Book to look at Stamets and say something like, you want me to read the feelings of a piece of metal? Right? Just say it and have him be like, no, but maybe they left an imprint. He's like, yeah, I know. Okay, all right, I'll do it. And it absolutely does work. But I felt like that was one of those moments that I kind of wanted the character to call out the absurdity of it, because it's very funny. Of like, you're an empath. Here's a piece of metal. Here. Go to town. It's like, what
read
do you want me
feelings.
To do?
I did feel like Book had a little expression that was like, really?
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Sure. He didn't want to be there anyway, right?
Like, no, he was like, I want to be punching Breen in the stupid helmeted face, but nobody has asked me to do that yet, so let me help you, Stamets. Yeah. I did like when Reno explains, oh yeah, that metal thing is probably a library card for this library, and she's like, it sounds like it's a story for the littles, and I was like, yes, it does sound ridiculous,
yes,
but it's also entertaining. So
yes, that was a good bit of meta commentary on the whole season-long story arc. Is this whole thing is like a little adventure going from chapter to chapter, and it's like, well, yes, it is. Although again, I had that terrible thought, because they don't seem to be talking, of like, you know, cut to Stamets is like, well, what else can we do with this thing? Let's vaporize it. No, don't. It's the ticket. We
you need
ticket.
It.
Don't do it. But it's fine. It's fine. Everybody figures it out, and the two plot lines dovetail, and that allows them at the end of the episode to be like, we figured it out, this is where it is, this is what it is, now we need to go there. Which I kind of enjoy. I don't know how you feel about this, but I kind of enjoy these episodes that end with them heading to the next episode. It's kind of fun to just have a little more kind of run over, where instead of it being the end of the episode is they resolve the Breen storyline, and then next week starts with them saying, okay, we're going to go to this next thing. They instead sort of end with it, and so it's like a standalone episode, but it also kind of carries you through to whatever the next act is. I kind of enjoy it like that.
I agree. I think that it's we talked about this last time. I think it's kind of, it helps it be serialized, but a little more with a lighter hand, even though it is, it feels like it's, to me, it maybe some might argue is more heavy handed because it's obvious that they then have to go to the next clue. But I feel like it's not like The Burn or something where you get an incomplete story and then you have to wait until the next. At least we're getting full stories every episode. They do require, they build on what's in the previous episode, but I feel like you wouldn't get as much from this just watching it by itself, but you could watch it and still enjoy it. And I think there are some episodes of Discovery from previous seasons where I don't know if that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
So I like it. And we didn't even talk about it. We have an old face joins us again on this episode briefly. Commander Nahn.
Yeah,
is back.
Nahn is there with the 31st century technology. She doesn't need a thing on her face to breathe and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, I mean, it's just like a guest star. I think they maybe just wanted to have her on before the show ended. And she's one of the people who came with them to the future, so they can bring her in and have her be there as her sort of security self, which I like. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate the moment where Book is like, I'm going to do this thing. And she's like, no.
No.
It's me. I do this my way.
So you're not, last time I saw you, you were shooting off an isolinear weapon. So no, thank you. She's like, I'm getting better. Part of the process is making amends.
This is part, the recidivism rates are very low in the 31st century. It's going to be okay. I'm doing my community service.
Mm-hmm.
I just
work release program.
I feel like I'm going to be doing some empathy scans of objects soon.
So I want to do something better.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good, again, it's just it is a very talky episode, but like it's a very Star Trek-y episode again in a different way, where it is we're debating things and they're paying off a lot of like the connection between Mal and Locke, and it really is sort of like kind of nice that it's a break from the adventure plot, mm-hmm. to essentially set up the finale of where the Breen are now the problem instead of Mal and Locke. It's Mal and Breen that are the problem. But in doing so, they create this sort of like diplomatic dilemma in this episode. And while the puzzle's going on in the background, like I think it's really artfully done. And I'll say, Scott, almost every season of Discovery in this part of the season where they're shifting gears into the end game, I feel like the episodes get worse because they go from like their story setup to their mechanical kind of resolution building. And if you think about it, this episode is a pivot point like that, but I think it's really well executed and it never felt like artificial to me. It feels like they set up enough stuff in the first six episodes that this episode feels more like payoff, even though I know what they're doing and twisting it and having it be the Breen. And like, so well done, I guess I'm saying. I think that it's done this better than most of the sort of late season Discovery episodes in past seasons.
Yes, it doesn't feel as, it feels like late season episodes of past seasons have definitely, like you said, they had the writers had their outline and they're like, this has to happen, this has to happen,
yeah.
And this has to happen.
We only have three episodes left, right? It's
those
happen.
Things happen. and I feel like this episode, this season, for whatever reason, maybe they had their outline more fleshed out and they were able to distribute it more across the episodes. And it just seems a little more, I mean, we haven't seen the final three
and there are only
episodes.
10. And there are only 10. Maybe that makes a difference too. I don't know. But it just,
I am
it feels
a bit sad.
Like I can tell that the story is shifting into its final act here, but it doesn't feel like it's got to move everything around on the chessboard to get there. It feels like this is the episode where that happens, and they took the opportunity. Like, how do we go from Mal and Locke to being the Breen as the adversary for the end of the season, the big bad, which you said a couple of weeks ago. You're like, it's clearly this is what it's going to be, and you're totally right. And the answer is, we're going to build this diplomatic episode that's going to cause all this to happen, and Locke is going to die, and there's this whole pivot that happens here. And like, I guess at that point it comes down to execution, and this episode I think executes it pretty well. So well done.
I agree, and I'm a big fan of this has nothing to do with what you just said, but it is in the episode. Breen Dreadnoughts, big fan. I'm a Star Trek ship guy. They're very big, very imposing, and I like them. And I also like the fact that in every scene after it shows up, everyone is standing next to a window and awash in Breen green because this big thing is just hanging there.
Yeah, I think the idea is, I think this was maybe in the writing room last week, the idea is that they're like cities. They like bring their cities with them. They're these enormous things. And so it gets across that the Breen are powerful, which we know. But also, I think it's interesting that just culturally that they it's not just a ship. It's like it's a part of their culture that's extruded out. It maybe it's a little more like the culture or something, right? Where it's sort of like it's those are novels for those who don't know.
Yes, with giant ships,
with enormous ships that have and so maybe they're kind of tipping their cap a little bit at that kind of idea that the Breen are just so different that like they have these giant ships and they're not just giant like for fun, like they're giant because presumably they have a lot of Breen on them and they have probably it's a city that is also a warship and this is just how they do it, and humans would be like, well, that's crazy, and the Breen are like rum, 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 and that means that you're dumb. So I like that. Again, I think I'm surprised I haven't seen somebody say, well, why did they let them come into the Federation space? And isn't that already an act of war? And my thought was, well, you don't want a war with them and you want to talk to them. So you let them in.
Right. And you're not going to be able to stop them anyway.
Yeah. And so just let them in and see if you can deal with it diplomatically, because they don't care about your rules and borders and things. And I thought it was interesting.
The episode did a good job of basically saying, listen, we can't stop the Breen. We just want to avoid having a confrontation with them.
Right.
So let's just figure out how we can do that without giving them the progenitor stuff, because we don't want to do that either. None of these options are great, but let's figure it out. And
let's
then we go, oh, they just want one of them and they'll leave? Okay.
Yeah.
Take them. Which that scene was not as dramatic as as tense as they had hoped it might be.
No, I thought for a while the episode was going to be a little bit more of like we can't give them to the Breen because one, they don't want to go, and that's a moral dilemma, and two, they have this information about the secrets, and if they give them to the Breen, we've already seen that this Primarch's ship is the one that destroys Starfleet Command in that bad future. So like we can see where this is going. And it was a little less that than I thought, because it became a little more personal about Maul and Locke, which is fine. But like I do like that it sets up the fundamental moral dilemma of this incredibly powerful enemy wants their guy back, and the guy is like, I don't want to go.
No, thank you.
What do you do? I mean, that's a classic Star Trek dilemma, let alone everything else about what they know about the progenitors and all of that.
And that's why I like so much that Maul and Locke are so uninterested in anyone else. And Michael Burnham is like, we are doing so much to help you. Just tell us something. And they're like, nope.
No.
No, thank you. We don't want to be involved in any of this. We need to keep the only leverage we have is the progenitor stuff that we could possibly give to the Breen. And so that is all we're going to do. We know that you can't really keep us safe. As long as have you seen my uncle's ship? You can't. Right. You can't keep us safe.
It's real big. It's real big.
It is big and green, and he's not afraid to show up with. I also enjoyed when he beams into the conference room. He beams in with one wave of guards, and then a whole bunch of extra guards come.
Yes,
and I was like, ah, yes, that's good.
I like that they have a bunch of Starfleet extras in that scene, because it would have seemed ridiculous if there were all those Breen and then like just four people from Starfleet. So they have in the background there are a whole bunch of other Starfleet people, and I'm like, oh, there's a lot of people there, and then all the Breen beam in, and I think, oh, well, that's why, right? Like, you know, we're gonna you bring 10, we'll bring 10, and we'll talk, kind of thing going on there.
That's right, just leave your stun staves on your ship or something. But there you go, the Breen. As Reno says, they've got faceless helmets and jackboots and no nuance, but there are big bads and they're fun.
It's fine. It's all good.
I like them.
Yeah.
And they're green.
So now the chase is on again. But yes, first, and maybe, to the library.
To the library. Maybe we'll be able to find Saru in that library.
Maybe.
I don't know when he's coming back, but he's not in this episode.
That would be. There was an article, or somebody interviewed Doug Jones.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And said that he was doing movie promotion during the shooting.
Hocus Pocus 2
on Disney Plus. But that's why he's not in a bunch of episodes, and then he comes back later on. So that's amen. Availability. And I never heard the story, but I assume that's what happened with Mary Wiseman and with Tilly disappearing last year, mm-hmm. was some sort of availability thing where she needed to go, and so they wrote her out. But I don't know. Anyway, yeah, it'll be good to see Saru again at some point. And yes, the Badlands Public Library is next on our agenda, I guess.
That's right. You don't want to have your books overdue from the Badlands Public Library.
No, or maybe you do. I don't know.
That's the twist.